You'd be proud of this game, and you can do a great deal for football today. A great deal for all the players and the league and everything else.
Oh, I see him looking. I'm closing.
I was born in it. Molded by it.
Yeah, so they got to wake up with a piss out.
I'm talking about Rasul.
Mercedes Lewis here, a.k.a. Big Dog. Big Dog, Big Dog, Big Dog. You're listening to Poor Man's Packers Podcast. Go Pack, go.
Good night, man. I'm so excited. Let's roll.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the Roman Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, once again joined this week with Todd. Todd.
Hello, hello.
And Todd, today is the day, everyone listening. It is the kickoff of training camp, our long-awaited, you know, nightmare is finally over. Football yes. is so close. We're only, family night is yeah. August 5th, I think.
Whose jersey is on the everyday Twitter where it's like X amount of days left? And it's JJ Watt's always first at 99. And then you just work your way down the list.
I've enjoyed the Packers subreddit. They've been posting like absolute nobodies for the numbers, like counting down until week one kickoff. Maybe BJ Coleman, our
number nine
original hero. Yes. Yeah, of course, number nine.
Love BJ Coleman.
still the greatest, one of my favorite drafters. I think I said it during our draft episode too, but the dude got drafted in the seventh round and he told Mike McCarthy in his phone call when he got drafted that he was going to be the best draft pick in Packers history. still the best. A year later he was the backup for a day and then he got cut and Scott Tolzien and Seneca Wallace came over. But yes, very important piece of Packers history there. But finally getting on with training camp. The first practice, it will be Tuesday at 10:30. It looks like most of the practices will be at that time. But before we get into that, you know, we got to have an icebreaker here, Todd. Huge news in the NFL today. Did you see that Packers legend Jimmy Graham signed with the Saints for 1 year?
Wait,
did you see this?
I actually did not see this. No, I actually did not see this. He signed for a year?
I woke up this morning, you know, and then I checked Twitter and it says Jimmy Graham signs 1 year deal with the Saints. And I'm like, man, it's really weird to sign a 1 day contract for a full year. You know, I just assumed because I don't believe he played in the league last year. He played with the Bears before that. But no, and it's weird too because they don't even have Sean Payton anymore.
Right.
He's going back to be the tight end. They have that, I believe his name's Juwan Johnson, who was their tight end one last year. But bringing the carcass of Jimmy Graham back, I literally thought it was day contract to like honor him and retire a Saint.
He's
actually playing football this year.
That's insane.
So you excited?
I'm excited to see him on someone else's team. I'm excited to watch him not even try to block anybody. I mean, how old is he?
That is a good question. He's got to be 35. Oh, wouldn't that be
He's
got to
be older than 35?
If he came back and actually beat Big Dog for the oldest tight end to play in the league. Yeah, he's 36 years old. I think Mercedes is older.
He's
got to
be older,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very important stuff. But I don't
doubt he can catch the ball. Like,
Big Dog's 39.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that he could catch the ball, but like, to be honest, his level of effort in his, I mean, the second half of the season, or whatever, what was that year?
We had him for two full
years.
Last year
that he played for us. There was no effort.
2019. We had him in 2019.
Like, get to the red zone. He was like, okay, let's try and catch the ball. Up until that point, like, he was not blocking anybody. He wasn't, I mean, it was bad.
To his credit, he was decent for us in the playoffs when he played. He had the game-sealing first down that had all those replays that people were getting pissed about because there was one replay where the yellow line was it was further away than the actual first down marker, so that screwed people up. But yeah, he is I don't know. Moving on from Jordy Nelson to sign Jimmy Graham in retrospect wasn't as great of a transaction as we originally thought it would be. But yeah,
well, that's fun though. It's a fun story, sure.
I don't think the Saints are going to have much else to look forward to this year, so at least they can have some nostalgia going on the football field.
Sure.
But yeah, this episode, we will talk a little training camp stuff, but we'll talk about Jordan Love a little bit. There's a couple more comments that have came out. Rasul Douglas came out and had probably the most positive words that anyone, for the most part, the people have had, at least nice, honest thoughts out there, I guess. Aaron Jones and Romeo Dubs have said a couple nice things about how he plays on the field. A lot of other players keep talking about his confidence and leadership, which is fine and dandy. But, I mean, I'm sure Mitch Trubisky was a good leader, too. Maybe. We'll talk about the multiple press conferences with Mark Murphy, Goody, and Matt LaFleur. Also, some football stuff. Obviously, training camp starting today. And we'll have some hot... We have our one hot take, one cold take for training camp. And then hopefully maybe some training camp stories too. I used to go to training camp way back in the day, back when, before Lambeau Field turned into Disneyland. But yeah, starting things off. So Rasul Douglas went on, God, what's his name? The corner for the Eagles. He went on his podcast, and we will play the clip here of Rasul talking about Jordan Love.
I done told a lot of great stories about your boy Jordan Love, man, because everybody got this Aaron Rodgers thing. I got a lot of I got a lot of upside for him, man. I just see him being a very, very talented player. Man, how it is going against him in practice and the difference between or similarities between him and Aaron?
Well, I wasn't there the whole OTA, so I don't really know what he was doing. I know last year he was cooking us in practice sometimes. But this year, he ain't really been completing nothing against us. We've been kind of doing our thing on him. But
yeah, on his ass.
We on him. But I like how he carried himself to the game. He got that swag to him. Like, all right, I hear y'all, but I don't at the same time. Like,
right.
And I'm a be myself. And I think that's what we trying to take that off his back. Like, you don't got to be Aaron. And A-Rod, you don't have to be him because honestly, it's only like one or two of him anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's already rare.
Come on, man. You don't see stuff like that, like people like that. So I'm like, you don't gotta be him, bro. Like, you just gotta be you, and the best you is all we need. But we gotta make sure we keep supporting him and keep being on him because he good though. Like, he can make every throw, he can make it. Like,
I done seen it.
He last used to hit us in the pocket with like no looks, everything. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, so he got it all in his game. It's just whatever he want to do, he could do. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think it's going to be a pretty good year. I think people don't really know what he's capable of doing, and they'll see it. I think the only really glimpse they got was a couple of glimpses of y'all game. And then like 2 years ago, he played the whole KC game. But I think he's a way different player than he was. You know what I mean? He makes the right reads. He can throw every throw. So to me, it's all once he get in that groove and he get his feet wet, he good.
He'll be
and
ready also, to go.
Yeah, because everybody gonna come in there like, oh, A-Rod out there, we got him.
Yeah,
and now it's like, and that's why I told him, because like even you got your homies and friends and they always ask you like, bro, he gonna be good? He gonna be like, do you know? Like, I'm like, I can't tell you yes or no. I want to let him prove his own and make his own way, because I know when he was going in, there was no game plan for him. Like, everybody game plan for the last 20 years was, we playing
A-Rod.
So, I thought that was a pretty revealing clip. One, I enjoyed that Rasul seemed to be very honest and open during this. I think a lot of these interviews you hear, like, especially if you go back and just Google, like, Preston Smith interviewing on NFL... God, I forgot what show he was on, but they asked him about Jordan Love. He's like the most monotone. Yeah, we're all really confident in him, blah, blah, blah. And David Bakhtiari had a similar one. But Rasul here, a lot of glowing things. The negatives. I mean, he did say last year Jordan was cooking them in practice. And then he said this year we've been on his ass. He's only been at two practices, Rasul.
Right.
It did sound like he kind of struggled those 2 days. He did mention that during the Eagles game, they didn't, game plan for Jordan Love. They were thinking more about A-Rod, and that Chiefs game that, he obviously struggled a little bit when they knew he was coming in. But the fact that he said that he can make every throw, and that last season he was throwing no-look passes and playing really well, that was the first time I'd heard anyone say one that he does the no look passes outside of Tyler Dunn's piece.
Only
a years
Patrick
ago,
Mahomes can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes
the
invented
only one.
The no look. Yeah. But either way, nice to finally get some really positive football comments about Jordan Love.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously, I feel like it's in general a positive, right? Like everything he's saying sounds pretty positive. I mean, I can't help but look past. It's like, okay, you know, we got him locked down in practice. Granted, only a couple practices, whatever. But then also when he's like, hey, you know, everybody's game planning for Rodgers, like referring to the Eagles game, right? And then when they do game plan for him, it's the KC game. Now, we've talked about this before, the KC game, KC's defense got a lot better after that game. So it's like, it wasn't just a Jordan Love thing. But I mean, I guess I do appreciate that it seems
we didn't have a lot of days to prep that game either because Rodgers got COVID on like Wednesday or Thursday.
True, and they brought the heat, right? Yep. And bring heat at a young quarterback is probably going to be a recipe for success more times than not. So, but anyways, I think in general, I think it seemed honest and genuine. I mean, Rasul seems pretty honest anyway. So of the people out there, like I don't feel like he's going to give you a BS answer, maybe at the podium, but like in this scenario, it seemed pretty honest. So yeah, I think it's, I like it. I mean, it makes me feel better than where we were at like a year or two ago, where it's like, one's talking about it.
It's
like, just, he was just not even there. It was scary.
Yeah. And that was, you know, one of my main arguments for the whole Jordan Love thing is literally, you know, a year ago, Rodgers got the $150 million contract, and no one was thinking about Jordan Love at this time. Absolutely no one. We assumed that would be his last year with the Packers. But yeah, nice seeing this, and you're saying how, you know, this is kind of a public thing for Rasul. He did win last year the Good Guy Award for the Packers Media Group, gives out a Good Guy Award for who's very open to the media, and Rasul Douglas won it last year. So hey, maybe we can take a little bit more than just, you know, take it with a grain of salt, like this is coach speak or football talk or something like that. So I was happy to finally get something when a lot of it has just been kind of, for 3 years, this is going into year four, but for 3 years it was, Jordan Love, he's showing command in the huddle and he's really good at getting the guys in and out of the huddle. I'm like, is this the bar that we've set for a quarterback in the NFL?
They're like, so he's super nice. On everybody's birthday, he brings a treat.
That's something else, you know, thinking way too much, diving way too deep into these comments we've got throughout the offseason is I do wonder if these guys on the team, and everyone says like we know what he's capable of and he can surprise some people. I wonder if part of it is they don't want to say anything concrete, but they also want to build him up with all this confidence shit, because maybe he has lacked confidence in the past. You know, we don't know anything about the guy. Maybe he has had some piss poor practices and he just kind of stacks those shitty practices or shitty throws into practice. And this is some way the team's trying to rally behind him. But hopefully
I will say, I don't think that's true, just in the sense of like when you watch him play, like he seems pretty calm, cool, and collected. Like he doesn't seem like he would get rattled, but again, small sample size. I'm just gonna say my gut says that's not gonna be an issue. I would think more like, you know, like that comment to me of like, oh, he can make all the throws. I'm like, if you're in the league, like in the practice, you better make all the throws, right?
Yes.
Like it's the consistency and going out there and like beating a defense.
Yes.
You have the Tebows of the world, right? That don't have the arm, but like more times than not, most guys in the pros can make it. It's just putting it together and being consistent, right? Like in protecting the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's like last week, I think NFL.com posted a Fields highlights.
Sure.
And they were all throws, I believe, or most of them that they included, and like a Bears fan. It's like, see, and people say he can't throw. And it's like, he threw, hundreds of times last year? Yeah, I would hope you can find five throws that are good. Like, you could do the same thing with Mitch Trubisky or a bunch of other busts in the past. So, like you said, the consistency.
Oh, Christian Ponder threw the ball well for a while there, right? Like, guys in the league throw the ball well, right? Like, that's why they're there. So, yeah, I don't know. We don't know.
We'll see. it's nice that we're getting past the off season is finally finishing, and now, you know, here on out, it's going to be actual football, or at least practices, that we're commenting about on the daily instead of, you know, every couple weeks.
It's just a hype train. We got months of hype. That's I mean, it's so much hype right now.
Well, it'll be interesting too, because Matt and Goody have both been a little shy about saying if he's going to actually play in these preseason games, the three preseason games, and especially getting two joint practices this year, which is the most we've ever had. They might try to, it seems like they're going to try to get those reps in practice instead of games, which the whole thing's kind of odd how they're being coy with it too. Because one, I think he's not going to play as much in the preseason as we would have liked. And also, it was odd this year for OTAs. First time I can remember that it was closed to the public. Every other year, the OTA practices have been open to the public, at least some of them, but only a few this year were open to even the media to watch, which is a strange thing that I assume Matt
LaFleur. Did they ask an oppressor why that was?
No, I know Jason Wilde's talked about it a little bit and how it's strange, and it seems like they're just trying to protect them, and it's more so, you know, wanting, his argument is, yes, you know, we could miss a bad practice from Jordan Love, but when we have nothing, if he had a really, really good day of practice, we're not going to know about it either. So I don't know, just kind of a odd thing that the team decided to do this year and not in years past. So
yeah.
But also, something else we have to talk about, it's something that's been talked about a lot recently in the country. It came up in Wisconsin this week, you know, people talking and saying that they identify one way when other people don't view them that way, that identity. I'm, of course, talking about the Packers ownership, the shareholders meeting today. Mm-hmm. A lot of Packer fans think that they're owners, and, you know, other NFL teams say you're not owners. It's just a
story. I knew exactly where you were going with that. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. So we had the shareholders meeting this week. Not a lot came from that, but they're once again, I love the Packers, and I'm sure Mark Murphy's a nice guy, but some of the shit that they do. So Mark Murphy is the president CEO of the Green Bay Packers. He's the most important man running that organization. Mm-hmm. On Monday, the day of the shareholders meeting, they had one press conference. Can you guess what the press conference was for?
I have no idea.
It was not. Mark Murphy talked to the media later in the day. That was not the live press conference. The live press conference was the Green Bay Packers announcing that they have bought the business Foamation.
The
business that makes the cheeseheads. So they had a live presser saying that they merged with them. They bought that company. As if, and Aaron Nagler said that this means that cheeseheads will be cheaper now in the future. Apparently, they were very expensive. They were like $50 for a real one. And he's saying that now they're going to be like $20 or $30.
I have one.
And I've got a couple from back in the day, too, when I was a kid. But, like, have you ever worn a cheesehead at a game? I did once when I was, like, in middle school, and I'm like, it's awkward on your head. I feel like a dick bag because the people behind me might not be able to see the field. So
I will say my kids get a kick out of it every now and then, so there's that, right? Because the kids like it. But aside from that, I wouldn't wear it to a game, probably. I mean, mostly for two reasons. It would fall off a lot. They don't stick on your head very well. And also, I feel like it would be pretty obnoxious to the people behind me. So
that's always my concern. But yeah, so the Green Bay Packers thought that the fans, you know, it definitely wasn't a free ad that they did. No, they thought that the fans were more interested in that merger with a business rather than hearing from Mark Murphy talking about the football.
I think the Packers media team is smarter than to put Mark Murphy on a live presser if they don't have to. I think that they're like, yeah, we're not putting this guy. I mean, we've seen what he can do, and it's not good. So
they honestly, that probably is one of the reasons why it went that way. And I think I've said it before, like Jason Wilde has said that there's people within the building who they cringe every time Mark goes up to a mic because they know he just kind of treats it like he's just talking to the guys, or he's got a little stand up set going on. It's like, why are you saying these things? And we'll get into more of that right now. God, where do we want to start here? Okay, first thing. Once again, and I've said this too many times, Mark Murphy, you can be the president. This guy should not be, you know, Matt LaFleur, Brian Gutekunst, and Russ Ball should not be reporting to Mark Murphy. This is what they did in the 70s when the Packers were terrible, in the 80s. It should be the GM is in charge of football operations. Mm-hmm. But Mark Murphy thought, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. So here's one thing that Mark Murphy talked about. He said that he believes it will take half a season before the Packers know what Jordan Love can be, what he is as QB1. Quote, comparing it a little bit to Aaron Rodgers' first year starter, yeah, I'd say at least half a season to know. And I think even though we ended up with a losing record that year, we saw enough of Aaron to know we had something special. So that's the comment he said. That's how he's rationalizing it, saying, we don't really know about Jordan right now, but halfway through the season, we're going to have a better idea. And even, you know, he references, you know, how this is going to be similar to when Aaron Rodgers was a starter. Well,
that was an okay thing to say.
It's an okay thing to say, but you don't have to give an actual, like, date. So now True. Mark is opening it up. Like last year, Brian Gutekunst, after the bye week, he spoke to the media. So now, and I think we do have a early bye week, or do we have a middle bye week? Oh, wow. So let's say Brian talks to the media week 10 this year. That's over halfway through the season. The press would be able to ask, hey, is Jordan playing well enough? Do you think he's QB1 now? Are you going to give him a new contract? And Goody would then be put on the spot because of something that Mark Murphy said. But anyways, back to what Mark Murphy said. He said it's similar to, you know, the deal when Aaron Rodgers took over as the starter. Well, this is what Ted Thompson said on November 1st, 2008, the day after that the Packers signed Aaron Rodgers. So his second contract, I mm-hmm. guess his first one after his rookie deal. 5 years, guess how much the contract was?
Five years, 60.
Ooh, $65 million. Very okay. good. Yes.
I actually feel like I kind of remember that contract, so that's why I was close.
It was compared to Tony Romo at the time. Tony Romo was the quarterback who had the previous deal, I guess. They were kind of in that same realm at the time. Anyways, so this is what Ted Thompson said the day that they gave Aaron Rodgers that extension after 7 games the first season of him starting. This is what Ted Thompson said. Yeah, it's nice that he's played well, but this is a long-term decision, and we knew what we had long before these 7 games. So it's completely different than what Mark Murphy said when Mark Murphy said it was the same deal with what we had with Aaron Rodgers.
It's quite a different ring.
This dude was in the building during that time and still didn't realize that Ted and those guys did know. And there's a famous story with Brady Papinga being drunk at or he wasn't drunk, but Matt the GM for the Seahawks now, he used to work with the Packers.
Oh,
and he was
Schneider.
Yeah. Yep. Schneider. John. And he told Brady Papinga while he was drunk, he was like, hey man, and this is right after Rodgers had his game against the Cowboys where he came in for Favre. He's like, Rodgers is the guy, man. Like, we know it's him. And then like the next day he went up to Papinga. He's like, hey, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So don't repeat that. But they knew ahead of time, and they clearly don't know right now with Jordan Love, which is fine, but it's still kind of tough when you move on from a Hall of Fame quarterback and you don't know how good the quarterback is that you have right now.
But maybe because you're going from Hall of Fame quarterback where, like, you know, like looking at him, like,
true.
Jordan Love's probably, I mean, and the odds are definitely that he is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. So right. That's just maybe what you get. And you're like, all right, well, he's not Aaron Rodgers, he's not Brett Favre. Like, but if he can go out there and play well, we can do well, right? So, like, I mean, and that's right. the territory we're in now is, like, we're just like everybody else now, you know?
And that's kind of the issue with me, because obviously we'll see with Jordan Love, you know, how good he is and all that. But if the whole reason why you draft a quarterback when we did is so that he's ready. So if we go through 2 years of we're wasting and we're just evaluating to figure out what he is, it's like, there was no benefit of drafting him when Aaron Rodgers was the starter for 3 years, you know? So that's, I don't know. We'll find out years down the line, but just another reason why I'm like, yeah, I think we probably should have waited a couple of years.
Good news. If he sucks and we tank, there's some good QBs coming up. So
I know
it won't be the end of the world. And a lot of times You get a stud rookie in there, and you can maybe sneak in a Super Bowl. So
that's that's the thing. This team, because we're extremely young, and I don't know how we're gonna be this year. And I don't think the first three drafts Goody had were very good at all. He had Jair in the first one, Rashawn in the second one, and then that third one, it's like John Runyon in the fourth round that we know for sure is good. Jordan Love is obviously taken in the first, and we don't know. But if he's not good, those first three drafts are going to be dog shit. But those next two, the one from this year and the previous year, I love these drafts, especially on offense. So if you could supplant a fucking rock star quarterback, I think this team could be really, really good in 2024, 2025, but we'll see. But either way, what I was getting at, number one goal for this year, or as far as Jordan Love's concerned, I mean, that's all we really care about for this year. I hope he's awesome. I hope he's a fucking rock star. I hope he's the guy. Number two option, I want him to be absolutely terrible. I want him to be dog shit.
Yes, you don't want good enough.
No. You want amazing, dog shit, and then everything else, you know, that's the other 20 quarterbacks. You need like a top 10 quarterback, it seems like. All those other guys, I don't want to.
We've talked about this before. Quarterbacks that win the Super Bowl are like, it's like got to be like a 90% or more rate. Those are Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Yeah, like, I said it on the podcast before. Since the year 2000, every team that won the Super Bowl either had a Hall of Fame quarterback or they put up over 30 points in the game.
Yep.
You need to, those are just facts. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Jordan can be that guy. I wouldn't doubt it if these weapons turn out to be what we think they could be, but there's just such a high, there's so many variables with this team right now.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that the whole year, but that first month, I mean, I was thinking about it again today. Everyone, the tight ends, the receivers, and the quarterback, the main guys of the passing game, are going to be like winging it. There's such little experience. The most experienced guys at tight end, quarterback, and wide receiver there for who will get substantial snaps or be a substantial or a big reason why the pass game's moving.
Yep.
Are Watson and Romeo Dubs, and neither of them played even half of the snaps last year. So it's telling you again, you know, how low the floor is and how high the ceiling is on this season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Moving on, another thing that came up the past couple of days in these pressers was the whole Matt LaFleur offense talk. So just so we can once again ground ourselves for, you know, what we're talking about here, I'm going to start with Mark Murphy, you know, the king of the Green Bay Packers. So this quote here is from his press conference back in 2018 when he announced that he was going to give himself more power. The GM was no longer in charge of football operations. Now the GM, coach, and Russ Ball would report to him. This is what Mark Murphy said. What this process showed me, and this was after he went through the process finding the GM, within football, we have silos. We've had some breakdowns in communication. One of the things that I really tried to do as I looked at it, what would be the best way to improve communication, improve collaboration among people within our football operation, and how do you knock down those silos? So this search process really identified some of those issues for me that was really helpful. So he said he changed the power structure so that communication would be better. This is what Mark Murphy said Monday. Quote, I think offensively you're going to see probably a little bit more of Matt's true offense. We gave Rodgers the flexibility to change plays and get in and out of things that really helped. But I would anticipate a strong running game and play action off that. Yeah, well, I think we might have thought that too after moving on from Davante Adams last year. So that was Mark on Monday. Remember, we're going to be better with communication. This is Matt LaFleur on June 16th. Quote, I always laugh at that. I don't know what that means. It's always our offense when asked about having a new offense. And then today, even during the presser on Tuesday, when asked about if he's excited to start a new offense with Jordan Love, he said, I don't know how to answer that because it's not a new offense. So once again, even the president of the Packers, even obviously the offense is going to be a little bit different this year. Yeah. But why are you saying these stupid fucking things when you should have nothing to do with the day-to-day football operations of this team. You're just the fucking president. You're not the owner of this team.
I mean, he basically, it would almost be better if he did just take like an owner role, because like some of the owners are actually pretty good at sitting back and being like, I own the team. But Mark is like, he thinks he's the GM. Like Mark thinks he's the GM and like he's like everything, and you know, but it's like, dude, like Mark, you're great with Titletown, great with like certain things. Like the Packers always make money, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's like, dude, like that's why you like at that level that you hire people, put them in place to do their job, right? Like, and yes. Like not to say that he's not doing that, but like when he talks about it, it seems like he's like Jerry Jones. Like he's just like, yeah. I know everything. Oh no, we're gonna cut this guy. Like, not saying he said that, but like that's the vibe that I get. And like it's more like the Jerry Jones, like it's kind of like my team. Where it's like, yes. Just back up. Like you don't have to be involved.
Looking at this story too, I know when he made this decision, it was about 50-50 in the league for owners that have the football operations report to them and teams that just have the GM do it, which raises the question, why is the only fan-owned team doing that? You know, right. And I don't think we've seen enough. Yeah, I don't think we've seen enough of an improvement with him doing that. We had some pretty good seasons here, but I don't know how much that has to do with people talking to Mark Murphy. So yeah,
there's a lot we'll of have variables
to,
there.
Yeah, we'll have to see in 2025 when he retires. That's going to be a huge day to see if they do shift that power structure back to what it was before he changed it in 2018.
I would imagine things change drastically on the top end.
I would hope, but the other thing that's interesting is these next couple of years are going to be a result of that. You know, that's going to affect it. If shit falls apart, I wouldn't doubt that they, you know, change the power structure. But if it's still going pretty well, maybe they hand it over to Ed Policy or whoever, and they're like, hey, it's been working. Just keep these guys who we have hired and kind of act like me in, you know, 2007 maybe. When I took over. But
yeah, maybe.
I really fucking hope not. And we've talked about it before. If we just went back to that, and I'm not a huge fan of Goody, but if he was in charge of everything, I would feel so much better about the franchise right now than I do. But we still have a full football season in front of us.
Yeah.
Couple other notes from Mark Murphy's comments. This was from Tom Silverstein, saying that Brian Gutekunst received a strong endorsement from President Mark Murphy, saying he has made the. And once again, it's like, Mark, you don't have to say that. You can say this shit a different way. He said that Goody has made the tough decisions, including drafting Jordan Love in 2020. So, quote, we can be competitive for the long term. They say the best time to draft a quarterback is when you don't need one. Another quote is he took a lot of heat when he took Jordan Love, at least in my mind. But we'll see what Jordan ends up being. Hopefully, he'll be a very solid and good QB. But selecting that gave us the flexibility to trade Aaron and get pretty good return for it. What?
I think Mark Murphy is just like, he's like the dad who's just like, yeah. God, my kid.
He's really proud of his kids.
This is why my kid did this. Yeah. Like he stole from the convenience store for a reason. Like those candy bars, they're important. And all he was, you know, he's like, he's got a reason for everything. Like, so he's just sticking up for his guy no matter what. Like that, that's him. Throws the New Balances on, he goes out and he's just taking arrows.
That's like, here we go. Fun story. My mom loves telling the story. One time when I was in like elementary school, I went to the principal's office or something because I was showing kids my underwear, apparently. Oh. I don't know. I was like 5-6 years old. So my mom's talking to the principal, and maybe it wasn't the principal, or something like that. But my mom's like, well, did you ask him why he was doing it? And they're like, no. And then they asked me, and I was like, well, I got a new pair of underpants I wanted to show off. And she was like, see? It's like, just because there's a reason doesn't mean it's a good one. And I think that applies here, too. It's like, yes, you drafted Jordan Love in the first round, and I hope he's fantastic, but we don't fucking know how good he is. If he's dog shit and Aaron Rodgers is good this year, are you still going to say that this was a good move? I just don't think you can.
I think we're onto something. Mark Murphy is just the father of the Packers, and the Packers can do no wrong. And until he casts one out, which is Aaron Rodgers, is like, yeah, we're not black keeping sheep. This one around. So, yeah, this one's not invited for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then the last thing, speaking of Rodgers there, to bring up, although I give Mark Murphy a lot of shit, he did say, or he did thank Aaron Rodgers for his 18 years with the Packers organization. But he said that they're obviously going to retire his number in the future and thank them. So it was nice that he did bring him up positively too. At first, people thought he wasn't going to say his name because when talking about Jordan Love and being a successor, he didn't use Rodgers' name, but he did throw him a bone there. So
I'm glad you ended on that, because I was going to challenge you to say something nice about Mark.
Mark is good at hiring people, but Mark seems to have gotten drunk with power since 2018. That's what it seems to be.
That seemed a little backhanded. I just wanted something nice. I didn't want something. Yeah. I didn't want it backhanded.
Yeah, you got some there. Right. Another thing to talk about with these pressers, and I've talked about in the past, is how it seems that they're, you know, I don't think they dislike each other, but I don't think there's this cohesive bond that we thought was going on early on in 2019 and 2020 between Matt LaFleur, his coaching staff, and Brent Gutekunst in the front office. And I thought this was a funny comment that Brian said today. So they had his press conference today talking to Brian Gutekunst, and they were talking about the defensive line. And this was Bill Huber asking a question about the defensive line. Said Jerry, talking about Jerry Montgomery, the defensive line coach. He said, Jerry said it takes some time for a defensive lineman to be ready. Just saying, you know, you expect a lot of those guys this year, but Jerry said it takes a lot of time for a defensive lineman to get ready. Goody responded and said, yeah, I don't necessarily believe it takes more time than any other position. So he like half cut Bill off and said that he disagrees with the position coach, which, sure, Jerry Montgomery might be trying to make excuses for like not having to get these guys ready to play, maybe. But it's very funny to see a GM immediately push back and say, no, these guys should play, especially when you look back at last year when Devonta White didn't play much. And then the seventh round pick, Jonathan Ford, didn't play at all. And now that defensive line room has been given the fourth round pick Wooden and the sixth round pick Carl Brooks. And Gouda's like, no, he's got to make these guys work. It's like, I don't know if he had a pushback like that, but it once again shows that there's a little bit of a back and forth going on between the coaching staff and the front office.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wonder how much, you know, we talk about a lot of these things, and like, obviously we're pretty far in the weeds here.
I'm way too far in the weeds.
Like we're really far in the weeds, but I wonder like look at a system that works so well for so long. Like look, go to New England and look at that. And I wonder, granted, nobody talks to the media over there, so you wouldn't get to have that insight, but let's pick a different one. Go over to Kansas City and just like as that system, as that coaching staff erodes a little bit and things start to get a little bit worse over there. I wonder if those things start to show up, you know, as if it's a normal progression of like, now we're not doing so well. Now everybody's opinion is kind of diverging a little bit. Like this isn't working. And like everybody's, you know, maybe it's one of those things. It's just a normal progression. Like as things kind of deteriorate, the team gets a little bit worse. You lose that success. Like Matt LaFleur said, winning covers up a lot. Right. Mm-hmm. And like everybody's on the same page. The questions are much different when you're winning from the media than they are when you're losing. And so maybe it's not as bad, I guess. Maybe what I'm trying to get at is like, it's not as those differing opinions could always be there, but they don't show up until like they don't come to fruition. People aren't asking those questions. Maybe. I don't know.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. It's for sure one of those things where, you know, last year being 8-9, you know, the arrow point down a little bit. And I think once again, it's kind of a reason it's happening because of the power structure a little bit, where now there's kind of a power struggle where the guys in the front office want to make sure it doesn't look like it's their fault, and the coaching staff doesn't want to make it look like it's their fault if they're not going to be very good. And it's once again funny where you see it from the top, where Matt LaFleur said, hey, we have to temper expectations, and Brian Gutekunst saying, this isn't a rebuild. Like, we are going into every year trying to win it all. It's like, Goody's pretty much saying, if we're not good this year, it's the coaching's fault. And he kind of said the same thing last year too, where he didn't fault the players in the season-ending press conference. He was more so talking about the coaching staff, and even that piece from The Athletic about Rodgers leaving, and, you know, they talked to Goody. one of the only quotes in there is Goody saying that the Packers didn't have a good plan for Jordan Love going in against the Chiefs. Now, he might have been right, but Jordan Love himself has said that he played like dog shit in that game. And you also just don't have to say that you had a bad game plan. Like, there's a different way to say things. So it'll be very interesting to see years down the line, or even the next few years if shit falls apart, how everything shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is going to be interesting to watch in hindsight. We can look back and kind of just see, you know, one of these ends up being true and what's not. I will say, I do 100% agree with the power structure thing being an issue. It just doesn't seem like a good way to do things. You know, regardless of what things turn into, that just doesn't seem like a good idea. So,
no,
I don't know. I would just agree that it's just like, that's just not a good idea.
Like I said before, I think I said this on here. One of the first things Mark Murphy did as acting president/CEO of football operations, when Matt LaFleur was putting his staff together, he wanted Darren Rizzi to be the special teams coordinator. Mark Murphy said, nope, we can't have him. And he was one of the best special teams coordinators in the league. Mark Murphy said, nope. So Matt said, okay. He had to hire Sean Meninga. That didn't work out. He had to hire Maurice Drayton. And then we saw what happened in 2021 against the Niners, how shitty our special teams were. That was a direct result of Mark Murphy not allowing Matt LaFleur to hire Rizzi, who's a great special teams coordinator, and he has been a great special teams coordinator for the Saints, who hired him on that offseason. So
I'd like to just throw out a question. I wish we had somebody who is like that we could call up, and like somebody from an organization, not even anybody big, but like, I would just love to ask the question. It's like, okay, so like, he want Rizzi, and it's like, no, he's too expensive. We got to get somebody else. Okay, if we're looking at dollars here, like, what is the differential? $100,000, let's say. Well, so like, the Packers, that's like, it's 10 minutes. You could ask for the $100,000 from the fans. They would be like, where do we sign? Can we send you it in cash through the mail? Well, or do you want a Venmo? Like, the money would be so easy to come by. I don't understand that aspect of like, this special teams coach is too expensive. No, it's not.
It absolutely ridiculous. And again, two other things about it. One, if he was going to be too expensive and they knew ahead of time how much it was going to cost, it was part of Tom Silverstein's story. If you knew he was going to be expensive, why did you even allow Matt to interview him? Two, you know what they did with Rich Bisaccia when they hired him on? They made him the highest paid special teams coordinator in NFL history. So what the fuck was the plan from the beginning?
That doesn't make any sense.
No, you know why? It's because Mark Murphy pulling the strings and he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. That's why.
I just like when it comes to like coaching, because like coaches don't make any money. Like if we're talking about like, look at what quarterbacks make.
He's still making millions of dollars now. Sean Meninga, I think it's like $4 million per, or they don't release the actual numbers, but it's not
sure, like a quarterback. But $4 million per is a decent player. Okay.
Yes.
You've got 53 plus on the roster of players. It's like, dude, like that's not a lot of money. If you're thinking a head coach, not a head coach, but a coach of, you know, either offense, defense, or special teams, like, okay, so you've got an offensive coordinator and then you've got, anyways, what I'm trying to say is like, that's an important role, right? Like that's a leader on the team. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to pay pretty much any decent quarterbacks getting $15 to $20 million now, and you're gonna say that like, okay, this I want this offensive coordinator, well, he's too expensive. It's like, no, he's not. Like, they're not too expensive.
You know what would have made some money? If you know what would have easily offset that, if Darren Rizzi was the special teams coordinator in 2021, the Packers don't lose that game, and then you have a second home playoff game at Lambeau Field.
That's a lot of money right there.
Yeah, weird how that would work out. But yes, that's it for the Mark Murphy talk. I talk way too much about my hatred of
Mark. I think you should just like calm down about Mark. Like, he'll be gone soon. He's just walking off into the sunset right now, buying golf courses, shaking hands, kissing babies. I mean, just let him
pushing his tongue through his fucking gap in his teeth. Yeah. Moving on to football stuff. Again, training camp is here, all is well. And again, getting older, I'm 31 now. The off season, like, football comes at the perfect time. Like, in middle school, it seemed like the season was over. It's like, oh my God, we don't have football forever. And now it's like, you know, I stay busy enough, and football comes at the right time, right? Yeah. When you know the seasons are going to start changing. So
I'm ready for excited. No Sundays. I'm ready for Sundays to just be gone into the abyss.
Yeah, I am as well, and my girlfriend definitely is not prepared for that. So starting things off, a couple notes talking about the actual team here. Rashawn Gary, Eric Stokes, along with not Grant DuBose on the PUP list. So Gary Stokes, some other nobody is on the PUP list. A reminder, the PUP list, physically unable to perform, it's players who got hurt via football who still cannot practice. During training camp, so there's two different ones. There's the training camp PUP and the regular season PUP. Training camp PUP, you are on that list. Once you can practice, you're taken off the list, and then you're practicing with the team. You're a football player. You're now on the 53, whatever. The PUP list for the actual season is you did not practice. If you weren't able to practice during training camp or you got hurt during training camp, you're put on this list and you cannot play for the first four games of the season. It used to be six games. Yes. So let's say Rashawn Gary has never taken off the PUP list. He will be on it throughout the first four games of the season. Rashawn Gary and Eric Stokes, Matt LaFleur, did say today he expects them to start practicing within the next couple weeks. So it's looking like they could be ready for week one. Maybe they won't suit them up, but they absolutely could be. There's also the NFI list. These are players that got hurt in a non-football way.
Non-football illness list. NFI.
Non-football injury list.
Nope. Illness. I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Tariq Carpenter, Grant DuBose, the seventh round pick, wide receiver, and Tavarius Moore, the safety we signed, are all on that list. So they won't be practicing Wednesday. And a quick run through of the schedule. Practice starts today, Wednesday. They have a ramp up period where they have a couple unpadded practices in a row. Like I said earlier, most of these practices start at 10:30. Family night is August 5th. The first preseason game is August 11th in Cincy. August 23rd is the last practice open to public. August 29th, they cut the roster from 90 to 53, which is different than what it's been. You know, like 5 years ago, there would be like three different cuts. Now they just do them all at the very end of training camp.
Yeah.
And then, of course, September 10th is when we kick off in Chicago. A couple of other notes I saw today from, I think, the dope sheet that the Packers put out. 34 players on the Packers roster right now are undrafted of the 91. 62.6% are sixth, seventh, or undrafted football players. And 94.6% of the players are 28 years old or younger. So this is obviously a extremely, extremely young team. Like I said before, there's only three players on this team that are over the age of 30, and that's David Bakhtiari, Preston Smith, and Pat O'Donnell. So very fun stuff. A very young team, a very exciting training camp we have in front of us. Todd, starting things off, I said it there. You know, we did have our preview last episode if you want to see us break down all the position groups, but a week later, we want a hot take and a cold take, something positive you think is going to happen and something negative you think is going to happen. What is your hot take for this training camp?
Are we saying hot cold take is bad? Aren't cold takes like freezing cold takes?
Yeah. Well, it's not like a bad take. It should be a hot take that's good and a hot take that's like you're burning in hell because it's not a good thing, you know.
It's like bad for the team.
Yeah, like a positive and negative. So I'll start. I'm going to say I think someone really surprises on the offensive line. That either being Zach Tom taking over at center. I don't think him taking over at right tackle would be that surprising. But I think someone from the group, if it's not Tom starting at center, I think someone between Sean Ryan, Rashid Walker, Caleb Jones surprises people. Like he might even start this year, or maybe he plays quite a few games. Like I wouldn't be surprised if even John Runyon gets replaced. You know, he's been kind of a staple there the last few years, but at the end of the day, he was still a fourth or fifth round pick. And we have guys who are just as athletic, have a higher draft pedigree than him. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these guys who were kind of on the back burner last year show up a little bit more this training camp after having another year of, you know, being in the system.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you. You have to pick one. Hot take. Who's the shining star?
Well, God, it's tough. I would...
If you got to pick one.
God, well, it's this will probably age poorly, but I'm going to go with Sean Ryan then.
That's okay. It's a hot take.
Yeah, because I think just the fact that John Runyon, again, wasn't a high draft pick. Sean Ryan was taken in the third round. He converted from a tackle to guard. So if he put it together, and especially after the PED suspension he had at the end of last year, I think he could push John Ryan this year. Let's go with that. Stamp that. That is the hot take.
You think maybe the PEDs are still helping him out a little bit, and he's just gonna be lean and mean coming in?
Yeah, there isn't a testable amount in his system, but it's still
right.
It's still in his blood.
Yeah, like it's like
a microplastic.
If you took a bunch of Tren and got super jacked, right? And then you're like, well, now I'm off of it. Like the muscle doesn't just fall off your body. You still got the muscle, right? So it's like that.
I think so.
Right. So like, yeah no, I'm with you. Maybe it's worth it to just do it. Just like you're not playing anyway. Get the 4-game suspension, whatever it ends up being, and then just be like, all right.
For some guys, absolutely.
Now but I'm super him, strong.
Yeah. For him, it was such a terrible cherry on top of a horseshit rookie season where he made no noise during training camp, and then getting tagged with a performance enhancing drug when he wasn't performing well is just a pretty bad little.
I wish they had to say what it was. I wish it was like PED suspension for this or a list.
Yeah, I feel like it used to get released, or we used to find out.
Well, like we found out that Richard Sherman's PED stuff was Adderall, right? Wasn't that a thing?
But it was probably because he said what it was. I know Jay Sternberger was the same thing, where he was on some prescription pills or something when he got busted and was suspended the first few games a couple of years ago. But I believe it's because he admitted it. So
okay, yeah. So yeah. maybe they never said anything.
Yeah. So what's your? I guess you could go with a cold one too if you want. Just offset them.
Well, I think I'm gonna do. I got my hot one ready. It's
okay. Then go.
Yeah. Hot the timer just went off. Lou Nichols, consensus Ooh. Number two back by the end of the year.
Ooh.
It'll be noted, AJ Dillon's a great guy. He doesn't seem like he runs behind his pads. Lou Nichols is the opposite from what I've seen, just like on a little bit of like his highlight tape and stuff like that. Like runs behind his pads. You know, he's a big boy, 220. He moves, mm-hmm. right? And like I think that's like the lightning thunder that we need. AJ Dillon, great catching out of the backfield. He's almost just like a big third down back in my eyes, right? He's just a big third down back that lacks lateral agility.
Yeah. You know?
And I mean, maybe he's lightning in a bottle this year. Great. But I think Lou Nichols, consensus number two by the end of the season.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. That would be something, especially if Matt actually finally like gave a young player more snaps late in the season.
That's a hot take. Like,
yeah. But no, I don't hate that either, because I think I said it before too, he didn't look very good in minicamp and OTAs, they were saying. He looked a little lost, but now that they're actually putting the pads on, if anyone's going to benefit, it would be someone like Lou Nichols.
Right. It's a guy that just goes out there and runs the ball. It's like, yeah, maybe he doesn't have blocking down yet, and maybe he doesn't, you know, it's the scheme and stuff like that. He's having a hard time. Because I think the language is an issue too in this offense. For a lot of people too, like young guys, isn't that a thing with the language and stuff? But
yes.
So yeah, I mean, struggle in shorts, but then put the pads on and it's a completely different ball game. So
mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. Okay. I don't know, but that's my guess. That's my hot take.
All right, cool. That's fair. I will accept that. Negative hot take, the hell take. Ooh, hell take. There we go. Hot take and hell take.
There you go.
My hell take is that the defensive line is going to be bad. I like Kenny. Obviously, Kenny is an animal. He is the December. In December, he just puts it on. He's a great player. However, last year, he didn't have a great, great year. He's only 27. I don't know if this is his 27, if he's turning like 28 in season here. But he is the guy. I like TJ Slayton, but if he was really good, I feel like we would have known by now. Devonta Wyatt, he obviously played pretty well late last year, but you do have some type of reservations about why it took so long. And then the two rookies we got this year, I mean, they're kind of small for defensive linemen, especially for a defensive line that is now getting slimmer, moving on from Dean Lowry and Jaron Reed. The only thing that could potentially save us would be Chris Slayton, who Goody called out by name today and saying that he had a good training camp. And then also got the guy from Miami, who I always forget his name. I know I said it earlier, Jonathan Ford, the seventh rounder. He's a big dude. So if he shows up and is really good, that would be a total game changer. But I think the defensive line is going to be the weakness of this defense more so than the safety position, even, which a lot of people have their own questions about.
Yeah, that's interesting. Kind of what you brought up. Mine is the opposite, where I think the safety position is going to be hot garbage. But yeah, back to yours. I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm a Devontae Wyatt fan. Mm-hmm. I think he never really got a shot to show off last year. He was always just lurking in the shadows, trying to get some field time. He got it here and there. And I think he had a couple sacks last year. He made some flashes here and there. So I'm excited for him. I'm hopeful that the D-line doesn't suck, but you never know. Right. I mean,
yeah,
it's like you said, it'd be great to have a big body like Ford have some success in there. You know, we lost a trash can full of dirt, you know. Maybe we bring in the Ford.
Yeah, we'll see. And maybe TJ Slayton shows up and, he's kind of, he always seems to be a hit or miss player. But even if Goody went out and just signed like a halfway decent veteran.
Yeah, veteran.
I'd feel a lot better. Maybe I wouldn't trust Jerry Montgomery to put out the right guy on the field. But
I think the saving grace on that D line, though, is the rush that we're going to generate off the edge. That could save us, where teams get into a situation where they're not really trying to run the ball. But that also means our offense has to put up points. So it's just it could be one of those we've been built in the past where once we get up, we're good, right? You get up and you're in good shape. But if you're not up, if you're not playing with a lead and they can sit back and run the ball, you're in tough shape.
That has literally been the issue of the Matt LaFleur Green Bay Packers. That is the type of defense that Mike Pettine tried to make, where he famously said, I'd rather make you walk than fly, or something along those lines. And it's been the same thing with Joe Barry's defense, where it's pretty straightforward, where you line up, you're not blitzing really, you're just rushing your edge guys and your defensive linemen really. But you're assuming you're going to play with a lead. And obviously last year that never happened, and you never put together a good run defense because you never thought you'd really have to. So it's funny the
philosophy is just like, so walk, not fly, whatever. Basically make you beat me on the ground. I mean, great if you have a high powered offense, right? If you want to go toe to toe with somebody, it's great. But it's also super defeating when that team just marches down the field every time. Sure. Your defense is on the field all day, where it's like, I don't know, I don't love that. And
running
backs turn the ball over a lot less than quarterbacks. So
yeah, you'd feel a little bit better about it. Not like I anticipate us competing for a Super Bowl this year, but you'd feel better about it if Shanahan wasn't in the same conference as you, as we saw in the 2019 NFC Championship game, where he literally walked all game and blew us out of the water.
He just said, too, he's like, I'm going to run it until they make me throw it. Well, we never made him throw it.
Eight times Jimmy G threw in that game.
So gross.
Yeah, terrible. But yeah, that's pretty much all I had.
My cold take is bad safeties.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about that? Why do you think that?
I just think we haven't seen anything from Darnell Savage to be super excited about outside from him playing in the slot. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, and I think that he could have a role in the slot, but I just think you lose that veteran leadership in the defense, in the back end. And that could potentially
doesn't that hurt saying that when talking about Darnell Savage? Like you're losing the veteran leadership.
Sorry, I was talking about Adrian Amos, and we lost him in the back end.
Okay, yes.
But if Darnell is your veteran guy, I mean, the communication has been a problem over the past few years, right? And it feels like to me the only guy that's really kind of knows what's going on is playing safety, like playing back a lot of times was Amos. So it's like, who's going to take that role now? And do we have, it's another thing, like when you have guys that are just exuding talent that have no experience, like that's what I think about our wide receiver core is like, I don't really so much care. I don't care as much that they don't know what they're doing out there. When you got Christian Watson, who just get him the, if he catches the ball, like he can burn passively. But if I've got C plus athletes that also don't know what they're doing, now we're in trouble.
Yeah, I guess the reason why I feel a little bit more optimistic about the safety group for this year, I would say the potential of the defensive line long term is a lot higher than the safety group that we have right now.
Yeah.
But the difference is we have guys with experience, and I wouldn't say proven, but they have started for other teams. You know, Jonathan Owens was okay for the Texans last year. The guy who we signed from the Niners, Moore, he started a couple years for them. He played in the Super Bowl, I think, for them and lost, I want to say. And even Rudy Ford, who came on pretty strong. He kind of tailed off towards the end of the year. But I feel like there's enough decent pieces there along with Anthony Johnson Jr., who, if he puts it together, you know, that's a nice little variable where he could surprise some people as well. So that's why I wouldn't, why I'm a little bit higher or lower, I should say, on the defensive line.
I just think that back end is so much about communication, so much about teamwork. And if you have a weak spot, you're in trouble, and you either got to mask it with somebody who's really good or super athletic, or you're just kind of going to fall apart. And that's the way I feel like is we just don't have, like, I wouldn't feel so bad. I think I said this last week too, of like, hey, if we're missing one guy, right? If we got a rookie and then somebody who's proven, I don't necessarily feel so bad, right? Same thing like at inside linebacker. It's like, hey, yeah, you can plug in, you know, a guy who's not going to be calling plays, a guy who's just going to be go out there and just like, just focus on filling your gap, right? Like you just fill your gap, right? Like, and that can work, but it's like, if you have two guys who don't know what they're doing, now we're in trouble. It's just they depend on each other too much.
Yeah. They don't have a Kenny in the
they don't have a Kenny safety, right? So that, I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's like, cause corners are kind of out on their own. They got to communicate, but like safeties are the, you know, they're the captains of the secondary, right? Like they're telling everybody what to do. And so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
If your corners are playing lights out, your safeties don't matter as much. Now your safeties can fix some things on the back end if you have less experienced corners, but if you can stop it at the start, it's a lot better than, you know, watching Darnell Savage pull some MD Jennings in the secondary.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to see that. And then, who knows? Rasul takes so many risks too. Like it just, like, there's a lot of things about the secondary that make me feel uneasy going into this year.
Well, yeah, Rasul, especially in 2021, which was great. No, that's the reason why Rasul's Rasul. But like, no, I could be wrong, but nothing has seemed more glaring going rogue than Jaire Alexander against the Bears in Soldier Field last year, where he got like beat twice on those long bombs because he was trying to like jump routes, but he was still able to catch up and tackle those guys.
Yeah.
I believe both of them. And then later in the game, he had, I think, a huge stop on fourth down or a pick or something. It's just, I don't know. I like having those rogue guys out there. God, we're all over the place, but we'll see how everything meshes later on this season.
Yeah, you can have those guys, but they can't all be those guys.
You have to be good if you're going to be those guys. Like, I remember fucking Josh Jones. Remember, he had never
loved Josh Jones in training camp.
Training camp and that one game against the Bengals, he looked really good.
Sure.
But he was fucking nuts. Like, he was so confident and one of those type of guys where he asked for a trade going into his third year because he was on the bench. And it's like, dude, you suck. Like, no one's going to, one, want you, and two, who are you to demand a trade? So.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, miss him. But yeah, wrapping things up. Again, training camp. God, I didn't give you a heads up on this, but I used to go to training camp back when I was a boy, just a mere child. 2006 through 2010, I went to training camp. So I thought we'd try this, Todd. Name a player in that timeline, and let's see if I have a story for you about him.
So say the years one more time.
2006 to 2010.
Okay. Trying to think of a unique player.
Okay.
CJ Wilson.
Nope. No interesting story to CJ Wilson. I will say I have a game-worn cleat from Jarius Wynn, who was the other defensive end, kind of no-name defensive end in that time frame. But yeah, no stories. All right, Nick Perry. CJ Wilson. Nick Perry. Ooh, God. You know what? Nick Perry, he was a little standoffish. I didn't get his autograph too much. He might have been a little bit later on too, but yes, no, nothing on Nick Perry.
Let's go
good start.
Offense. Let's go with maybe somebody who everybody would obviously know. So how about like Jordy?
Jordy, I did get his God. Now see, this isn't going too hot. Jordy, I did get his autograph once, but only by the bikes before practice. Okay, maybe I should.
Maybe your turn. Maybe you tell a fun story.
Okay, do you want Atari Bigby? Do you want Brian Brom?
I definitely want Atari Bigby. I don't even need to hear the options. Love Atari.
Atari Bigby, and this was like me in middle school. This must have been 2006. And this is when I was always reading up on like Packers.com and shit. And I remember, I think it was Underwood, who was the safety the previous year. He had a really good training camp, and it looked like he was going to be the starter that next year. But he tore his ACL in a preseason game. It might have even been when he was Lambeau leaping. So he obviously didn't play that year. So that next year, I'm at training camp, and I was like, oh, hey, you signing my ball or whatever. I'm like, hey, really looking forward to you playing this year. I hope you start. I know you had a great camp last year. He's like, oh, great. So he keeps going, and then next person who walks up is Atari Bigby. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I have him sign. Atari actually ended up being the starter that year. And my favorite thing about Atari Bigby, and I hope everyone remembers Atari Bigby.
Yes.
I think he does have some roots in Jamaica, but gigantic, thick dreadlocks.
The dreads.
Wore number 20. And just, he was a hockey player. All he did was use his shoulders.
He's a freight train.
He showed up to the facility one of those days, and he had a shirt on that said, smoke weed, live longer. And he wore it in the facility. I just couldn't believe. And it, you know, I was like 15 years old. I'm like, this legend, this hero of mine, there's no way he's talking about doing illegal drugs, is he? But yeah, God, I'm trying to think now. What else was there? Brian Brown.
Yeah, small hands. What do you got?
So, and that's back then when I was a little less, I don't know, maybe I didn't know how to talk to football players, but I remember reading up because that first year, it was when he was a rookie, he was going back and forth with wearing a glove and not wearing a glove, but he had a dog shit training camp. He was terrible. Right. He was so bad that he was a second round pick, and Matt Flynn as the seventh rounder beat him out as a rookie. And I remember this is like 3 weeks in a training camp. You know, he signed before practice or whatever, he signed my ball, and I look over and I see he's wearing the glove, and I'm just like, oh, you're wearing the glove today. He just like kind of gave me a look and then just kept signing the ball. And looking back, I'm like, oh, the glove's gonna fix your throws. Some little snot nosed 15-year-old.
Is that gonna make your hands bigger, shit. Brian?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll have a couple other stories later on. We'll have a couple episodes during training camp. Still, my favorite story, and I think I've said it before. I think I've said this to you before, Todd. Because I would go there, I'd catch part of practice, but I was just there trying to get autographs. So one time, and this was like 11 p.m., most of the cars are out of the parking lot. We knew that was the players' parking lot and that Mike McCarthy parked kind of where the game day stuff is underneath the stadium where they like bring in concessions and stuff and where the buses go in.
Yeah, it's like where they bring in all the food and everything. What would you call that? Like a loading dock or whatever.
Yep, the loading dock. That's the perfect way to describe it. So it was me, my younger brother, and like two other kids that were actually who are from Superior, and they happened to be down there too. And I was like, well, let's go over to the gates and see if we can catch McCarthy leaving. So we're there for maybe 5 minutes, and we see a big, you know, an SUV pull up with tinted windows. Gate opens, comes up, pulls up by us, could have kept going, doesn't. It stops. Driver's side window rolls down, and it's fucking Mike McCarthy right there. And he's like, hey, boys, could not have been a cooler dude.
That's cool.
You know, talked to us for like 5-10 minutes, was telling us all about practice, signed everything we had, took pictures with him. Couldn't have been a better dude. And again, he could have, his windows were tinted. He could have just kept going and we would have been none the wiser. But that dude took the time to talk to some kids and sign our shit. And I'll always be a Mike McCarthy fan because of that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, it's fun to see that. I think probably maybe a little bit easier than being a player too, where like people probably aren't going hanging out there too often. Mm-hmm. And so like you probably were able to get a more genuine experience. You know, like I do feel bad for the players too, because it's like, God, that must get annoying.
Absolutely. You know? They get good at pretending. They pull their phones out and put on their head, and then the they headphones. Pretend that they're on the phone.
The Beats headphones they were like a godsend.
Talking to someone too. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Worst experience. Let's just hit on that quick. Was there anybody that you were like, that guy was?
So it's funny you ask that. So this is a good one and bad one. So my favorite player early on there was Al Harris. I loved Al Harris even more than Brett Favre, maybe because being super young. So it was very impressionable to me. It was the pick in overtime, against the Seahawks, and Matt Hasselbeck, and he putting the finger up while he's scoring the touchdown. Yep. So I always loved him. So he's leaving. I think it's in the evening, and he's leaving to go get dinner or whatever. And of course, you know, the veteran autograph seeker I was, I'd say, "Oh, Mr. Harris, can you sign?" And he's like, nah, I'll get you later. I'm like, okay, sweet. And I had like an 8x10. I'm like, awesome. I'm going to get Al Harris to sign my picture here. So he comes back. Later. He comes back, and I swear to God, he had a bag of Kentucky Fried Chicken, which I fucking love Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was like, Mr. Harris, can you sign? And he's like, I told you later. And he keeps walking. I'm like, oh, fuck. Oh, man, I pissed him off. And then, you know, an hour or two goes by. He's done with meetings. He comes back out. I'm like, Mr. Harris, he walks up. He's like, hey, I'm sorry for yelling at you earlier. And then he signed my 8x10.
All's well that ends well.
And not like I care. And I've never sold any of my autographs, but the worst signature. He does the 31. He did not pick up the pen. So it's just a fucking scribble at the end. But that's I can't knock it. I've still got it framed. I love Al Harris.
You have an Aaron Rodgers signature. Is that on a jersey?
Yeah. I think I've said that before.
Is that the Follow Your Dreams one?
Yeah, that was the tailgate tour in 2006 or 2000. Right. I think it was 2007. He came to Superior, our hometown, and I had my dishwasher money I had saved up washing dishes at Grizzlies. Got my stitched jersey from Champs for like $100. They only had white ones left for whatever reason. It's not like they really care those 2 years, a year or two he had been in the league. And, you know, there was the whole line. I get up to the table where he signed an autograph, a little snot-nosed kid. And I give him the jersey to sign. He's like, oh, what's your name? And I'm like, Spencer. So he writes, to Spencer, Follow Your Dreams, Aaron Rodgers. So maybe that plays into my bias a little bit with all this fucking Rodgers versus Goody stuff, but I've obviously got that fucker framed up and on the wall. And I did have it before he was starting, so that could have aged. Imagine if he was a bust and I had the fucking Follow Your Dreams, you know, Greg Oden.
Ooh, there you go.
Brady Quinn. Yeah.
Oh, Brady Quinn. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
There you go.
When is Packers Family Night? When do those tickets go on sale?
I assume they're on sale right now.
They sell out like immediately. So if they are.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
I didn't think they had as high attendance recently as they had in the past.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong.
Yeah. I thought it's different out with
Jordan Love now too, but yeah.
Yeah. I know in the past they've sold out like pretty quick.
I can't wait to get the one highlight clip that we'll have go viral on Twitter that seems to happen every year. There's usually like one family night play. Well, I think last year it was actually a really good throw from Jordan Love in the end zone where he split two defenders to Romeo Dubs. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that happened last year or the year before.
Okay, I'm looking here now.
This is very important.
You can buy tickets. Oh, yeah, you can buy tickets.
Cool. There you go. How much is it to go to family night?
It's so cheap. It's actually like, so kind of the reason I brought up is like, it is actually a really great thing for like little kids and mm-hmm. stuff.
The fireworks are cool.
Fireworks are cool. It's a cool experience. Watching, there's nothing to watch. It's yeah. it's I mean, my review of it is it's like if you water down a middle school practice, that's mm-hmm. what you're watching. And so it's a lot of Lambo leaps. It's a lot of just like screwing around.
That's right.
So like it's more just like, I honestly do think it's just like for the kids, right? So it's cool mm-hmm. if you have kids. It's a great thing to bring them to. But yeah, so you're looking at starting at $14. And I'm sure if you get cool. down close, it probably goes up to, it's really not that expensive. $66, I think, is the most expensive ticket I'm seeing. So it's
that'd be pretty cool if you got really close.
Cheap. And I think they have like, they got cheap food and stuff during it too. It's kind of like their fan appreciation thing, you know, where the mm-hmm. some places do where food is cheap for gotcha. Like one game or whatever. This is kind of like all into one. So yeah, it's cool. So
cool. All right. Well, we'll have to see if there's anything, you know, that comes out of family. Yeah,
hopefully
night
nobody
this
gets
year.
Injured during family night. Cause that oh. is a travesty because it's literally like not even a practice.
Right. Yeah. I was at the last family night that was a scrimmage. It was against the Buffalo Bills. That was Aaron Rodgers' rookie year. They actually brought in other teams for it. So
that
there
was
you go.
The
That's
last.
A fun
oh,
fact.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's fun.
That ben would Steele be a lot caught better. A touchdown.
That would make it.
Yes.
That would make it way more appealing yeah. to go to that. Like, that would be really fun to go watch an actual scrimmage.
We went to that family night, and then after that, we went to preseason games there on out. I think that was the only family night I've been to.
Sure.
But yeah, there you go.
Family, it's fun. If you have the chance, go. At least go once. Just go one time.
Yeah, there you go. Just go once. Catch a practice, too.
Yeah, I wish I could do that.
Yes. With that, what a fantastic episode. If you want, leave a 5-star review, subscribe, unsubscribe, tell a friend, tell an enemy. I really don't care. Oh, but follow the, you know, just listen to the podcast. We're two cool dudes, right, Todd?
Oh, of course.
Okay, cool. Todd, do you have anything else?
I do not.
Cool. Well, I don't have anything else. So with that, Eric Koskinen, please don't sue us. Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, it just won't pay. I worked all year. I worked all month. Then they took my money.
Recipe
of
Two Hearted.
Oh, no, no.
It's just the same thing. They're just like,
it's just, you're just like experimental.
Somebody pissed in the vat this time. Let's make a new can.
No, I haven't. I have not seen or tried that. I did get, today I went to huge news in my life. The Quick Trip on Dodd Road by where I live, like a mile or two yeah. away. They tore it down and put up a brand new one.
Oh!
So the last day,
so the new one is up now.
The new one is up now. Yes. So I've gone there a couple times. So wow. I saw a large, a pounder, a large can of Baja Blast, and I was like, oh, that looks good. And I looked, and it's the Baja Blast energy drink. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I got that. It was okay. It was a little flat, but the taste was solid.